Well, today we are starting a new and a very short message series called Things to Come. Things to Come. You're probably aware that the season of Advent starts in just a few weeks, and if you weren't thinking about that already, now you are, and it's not that big of a surprise. And the season of Advent, this is really cool, the season of Advent actually starts the beginning of a new church year. Did you know this? That each year, the church, God's people, the church keeps track of time in its own way. And so while we recognize the seasons that come and go, winter, spring, summer, and fall, and we keep track of the months that everyone else operates by, January, February, March, and so on, as the church, we keep track of time in another way. So the church year starts with Advent in just a few weeks. It's a time when we're waiting for the Lord to arrive. And then there's Christmas, our celebration of Jesus coming into the world. There's Epiphany, a season when the Lord's character and his person are revealed to us. There's Lent, a time when we walk with the Lord towards the cross. And of course, Lent ends in Holy Week and Good Friday when we see Jesus on the cross. And then there's Easter, kind of the high point of the year, when we celebrate Jesus' resurrection and his triumph over death. And finally, then there's Pentecost. It's the longest season of the church year. It starts with the day of Pentecost in the spring, and it runs all the way until a couple weeks from now. And from that description, you might have noticed that the church year actually follows the life and work of Jesus Christ. It starts with us waiting for his birth. The church year runs through his life and death and resurrection. We see the Christian church then begin at Pentecost with the sending of the Holy Spirit. And the church year ends with us waiting once again. But now, this time, at the end of the church year, we're waiting for Jesus to come again on that last day and to finally complete his work of renewing us, renewing the world. And so we're waiting once again. So today and for the next couple weeks, we're talking about things to come. Things to come. We'll talk a little bit about that last day, what that's for, what it's like. We'll talk about these days we're living in right now and what they have to do with the last days. And today, to get a sense of what's to come, we're actually looking back. We're looking back at the saints who have come before us, the saints who have come to and gone from this world before us. So, this is connected, I promise. Let's talk about trading. Kind of a rough transition. The kind of trading I'm talking about is the trading where you have something you don't really want, or you want something else more. So you give away something you have, and you get something you want. Trading. We have this idea in our heads. You agree to make an exchange. You give what you have, and you get what you want. And let me tell you the story of Kyle MacDonald. Because Kyle MacDonald was briefly famous about 10 years ago because of what he managed to accomplish through trading. So Kyle MacDonald decided one day that he would like to own a home. And he began by taking a look at his desk, and there he saw a red paperclip. And he wondered if he could trade up over a series of trades, if he could trade up from that red paperclip to a home. And believe it or not, over the course of a year and 14 separate trades, he did just that. So Kyle MacDonald traded his red paperclip for a fish-shaped pen. Good trade, right? He traded the fish-shaped pen for a handmade doorknob, which he traded for a Coleman camp stove, which he traded for a gas generator, which he traded for a keg of beer and a neon sign, which he traded for a snowmobile, which he traded for a trip for two to the town of Yak, British Columbia, which he traded for a box truck, which he traded for an album recording contract in Canada, which he traded for a year's worth of rent in Phoenix, Arizona, which he traded for an afternoon spent with heavy metal musician Alice Cooper, which he traded for a rare collectible snow globe, which he traded for a paid speaking role in a film because the director of the film was a fan of snow globes, apparently. And finally, Kyle MacDonald, traded that paid speaking role in a film to the town of Kipling, Saskatchewan, in exchange for a very serviceable farmhouse that was built in the 1920s. Not bad for starting with a red paperclip, right? And you know, kind of like Kyle MacDonald, I think we all have things in our lives that we don't really want to hang on to. We have some things in our lives that we'd rather trade away for something better, kind of like that red paperclip. You know, we all have pains, physical, emotional, and spiritual pains that we kind of wish we could just trade away and do without. We wish we could get something better in return. In our reading for today, Jesus actually shows us how the kingdom of heaven is a place for just that kind of trade. Our reading, of course, is a very famous passage from the Gospel of Matthew. This is the beginning of Jesus' teaching in the Gospel of Matthew. So the beginning of his public ministries, this comes shortly after Jesus has been baptized. Jesus was tempted in the desert for 40 days. And then Jesus returns to the people and begins to preach. He begins to do miracles and healings. Jesus gathers his first disciples. And now, in chapter 5 of Matthew, we come to the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew is recording Jesus' teaching in depth here to help us get a sense of his whole body of teaching. And this sermon runs all the way through chapters 5, 6, and 7. He teaches on many different topics of faith and life, how we understand ourselves in relation to God, and how we act in relation to one another. And Jesus begins this whole section of teaching with a very famous passage, the Beatitudes, what we read today. And so, what we read, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. And so for this whole Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus is doing is he's teaching his disciples primarily, the people who are already following Jesus. And so that means for us, there are some words here for us. We're learning from the guy we follow what his will is for our life, what he's teaching us about our relationship to the Lord and the world. But the crowd is also there. The crowd is kind of like the world. Those people outside the church, the people who are maybe just checking Jesus out. They've heard something about him, but they're not sure what to think about him. The crowd is also there, listening in. So there's something here in these statements that speaks to anyone who hears. And Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, or the weak, or those who are not self-serving, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." We'll stop there for a moment. 8 times, Jesus turns our expectations on their heads. And let me explain how this is happening. Because the people Jesus names here sure don't seem that blessed. Those who are poor in spirit, those who mourn, those who are meek. Let's take the first blessing as an example. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. If you're talking to a person in first century Galilee, which is where Jesus and when Jesus is teaching, that statement doesn't make sense to say that the poor of spirit will inherit the kingdom of heaven. In that day, of course, everyone was religious. Everyone believed in something. Whether you were maybe a faithful Jew who kept the law, those people were listening to Jesus at this time, or if you were Greek, there were some Greek people listening to Jesus at this time too. You would have worshipped any number of the gods of Greek mythology. But what everyone had in common in that day is that they would have looked at the world and they would have said, yes, you know, there are some people who are rich in spirit and there's some people who are poor in spirit. So if you were maybe one of these Jewish people Jesus was preaching to, you would have thought, some people keep God's law really, really well. They would have been thinking of guys like the Pharisees. And the people Jesus is teaching would have thought, man, those Pharisees must be rich in spirit because they're like super holy. The whole point of what they do is to keep God's law perfectly. This is what they're all about. And even though Jesus would go on later to teach everyone that the Pharisees were kind of missing the point, the people would have thought of those Pharisees as being rich in spirit. And they themselves, when they thought about themselves, well, I'm not a Pharisee. My job isn't reading the scriptures and trying to be holy. My job is farming. My job is blacksmithing. My job is caring for my family, serving another. They would have thought of themselves as poor in spirit, probably not worthy of the kingdom of heaven. And the same way if you were one of the Greeks listening to Jesus. The Greeks, they had professional religious people, priests and priestesses, who they thought had a special connection to the divine. The Greeks had oracles whom they believed would speak messages direct from the gods. The Greeks also had the stories of mythological heroes. You've heard of guys before like Hercules or Odysseus or any number of Greek heroes. And so if you were Greek, then these people, the priests, the oracles, the heroes, they were the ones who were rich in spirit, and you probably weren't. And again, they thought of themselves as not really worthy of the blessings that these other more spirit-filled people would receive. And let me add that people right here in Fort Wayne in America, we think the exact same way today. Many people do. if we didn't experiment. You know, if we were to go downtown, to downtown Fort Wayne, go out on the streets and to start asking them, who are the people in America who are rich in spirit, who do you think they would answer? Well, they'd probably start talking about those people who they think seem spiritual. If they have some exposure to Christianity, maybe they would say people like pastors or priests, monks or nuns. They might talk about the Pope, who keeps making headlines today. If you're talking to someone who hasn't really been exposed to Christianity, they'll still talk about someone who seems spiritual. They might talk about New Age religion or Eastern religion, people who are really into that, who maybe meditate a whole bunch. They'll talk about the people they see who seem to be more spiritual than others. And here's why this is important. Because if you would go on and ask these people, then who's going to inherit the kingdom of heaven, no matter how they define that phrase, it's something good, they would probably say those spiritual people will definitely inherit the kingdom of heaven, for sure. But as for me, well, I just kind of hope I will. You know, I kind of hope I've been spiritual enough, because what we all see in ourselves is that we are poor in spirit, every one of us. I think probably every one of us would say that about ourselves if we have a little bit of self-awareness. And if we wouldn't, well, maybe we need to work on some of that self-awareness. But Jesus turns this whole idea upside down. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, not the rich in spirit, but the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he goes on to keep turning these expectations upside down. Blessed are those who mourn, those who cry over the death of loved ones. They're blessed too. And those who are meek, or those who are weak or not self-serving, they are blessed too. And those who seek righteousness but realize they'll never attain it, they are blessed too. Those who are merciful, those who are pure in heart, those who make peace, people who, it's sad to say, tend to be taken advantage of today by others with evil intent, they are blessed too. And even those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, they are blessed. Jesus is turning the world upside down here, because what Jesus is doing is he's totally disconnecting worldly goods, worldly power, worldly respect, and worldly benefits from heavenly blessings. He's saying these things are not related. And so the way that the world thinks of itself, the way that we learn to think of ourselves and others from the world, is just totally wrong. That is not the way that the Lord does things. Where the world connects these things and sees worldly benefits as evidence of God's favor or super spirituality, the world does this, but Jesus says, no, that's not how it works. Because what's going to happen, Jesus knows, what's going to happen, and he's not saying it yet, what's going to happen is that he is going to execute a trade. Jesus is going to make a trade. Jesus is going to take something we don't want, namely all this bad stuff, and he's going to give us something better in return. Jesus is going to make the number one record-breaking trade of all time on the cross, because it's through the cross that Jesus takes all of our poor spirits and welcomes us into the kingdom of heaven. It's through the cross that Jesus takes all of our mourning. It's through the cross that Jesus takes all of our weakness. It's through the cross that Jesus takes all of our pain and sadness. And through the cross, Jesus makes a trade. Jesus trades our mourning for his comfort. Jesus trades our weakness for his power. Jesus trades our unrighteousness for his righteousness. Jesus trades all of our hurts and pains for life, forgiveness, and salvation. Jesus welcomes us with our poor spirits into the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus drives all of this home. In verse 11, he says, blessed are you. Blessed are you when all this happens to you. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of things, all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Blessed are you. These promises are for us. And today, especially on All Saints Sunday, we recognize that the sufferings we suffer are nothing new. God's saints have dealt with them before. And these promises that Jesus offers to you today are the same promises that the saints of every age, of every generation, have always relied upon. And not only that, but the really cool thing comes when you think about the fact that we trust in Jesus' promises by faith. That's all we can do. We hear his word and we say, I trust him. I know this is true, but I can't see it. But the saints who came before us don't need to have faith anymore. They don't need faith anymore, because for them, all of these promises have been delivered. So the people that we remembered a little bit a while ago, Margaret, Al, Jeff, Max, and Mariah, and all the other saints who have gone before us, they see the kingdom with their own eyes right now. That's cool. They know the comfort of the Lord. They have been filled with righteousness. They have experienced the Lord's mercy. They have seen God. So, blessed are they, because all of this is real and tangible for them right now. And blessed are we, because we can look back to the saints before and we can see the Lord's faithfulness through their lives. Blessed are we because of the saints who came before us, because they also now point us towards what's to come. Their blessed rest in heaven, their reception of all these good blessings, their blessings point us to this last day, all the good things that are coming for us when Jesus returns. So, Jesus says, rejoice and be glad, because you know that you are blessed no matter what happens in your life. Of course, you know there are some days in your life when you really feel blessed, things are great, and there are some days in your life when you darker times in your life when you really don't feel blessed, when you feel like all of those blessings have flown away. And Jesus' message for you today is that you are blessed in him no matter what. This blessing will never be taken from you. So rejoice and be glad. And by the way, I believe this is one of the most effective witnesses that we can have today as Christians. It's our gladness, our rejoicing, because, you know, our culture is kind of consumed by anger and competition. Our culture is kind of consumed by fear, and I don't need to say any more about that, because Tuesday is just 2 days away. And it's really only the church, it's only God's people, it's only followers of Jesus who can have a joy and a gladness that perseveres through all of life, through good times and bad, through certainty, through uncertainty, through worldly blessing and worldly poverty. We have that joy in us. So rejoice and be glad. And today, especially, know that all the saints in heaven, Margaret, Al, Jeff, Max, Mariah, and all the others, they rejoice with us, even now. Amen.